We talked, obviously, a lot about Iraq because that was more than half of Bush's speech. But, you know, he did lay some domestic proposals on the table, and probably the most significant one was his proposal about health care. And he laid out this kind of proposal, which basically, it's very hard to figure out, frankly. I mean, part of it isn't. He said that there'll be a standard deduction for health care, just like a deduction on the, you know, the interest on your home mortgage. So you can have this deduction. I didn't know that was the problem. I mean, I frankly thought the problem was people couldn't get health insurance because they couldn't afford it, not because they couldn't deduct it. And because generally people that can deduct things and that itemize, usually they've got money. And usually the people that can't get health insurance don't have money. Something like that? I don't know. That's how I would call it. So, but obviously, I mean, Bush has made a decision, and this is how he's defined the role of government. This is how he defined it in his speech. And there it goes again. Okay, here we go.
When it comes to health care, government has an obligation to care for the elderly, the disabled, and poor children, and we will meet those responsibilities. For all other Americans, private health insurance is the best way to meet their needs.
Okay, I mean, he says that obviously that's not even up for discussion, but we're going to discuss it, and we're going to discuss it with someone who knows very well that maybe private health insurance is not the way to meet our needs. It certainly isn't for every other industrial country in the world, except for, I think, South Africa is the only exception now, and us. So we're going to find out more about all of this. We've talked about the issue of universal health insurance before. In fact, we've had a colleague of our next guests on, Dr. Quentin Young, and we are very pleased to have with us the senior health policy fellow and former president of the PNHP, which stands for the Physicians for a National Health Program, Dr. Don McCann. Dr. McCann, welcome to Left Field.
Thank you.
Well, you know, I'm having trouble figuring all of this out. I mean, I want to play a little bit, and I'll play his description, and then maybe you can elaborate on it. This is what Bush said. This is how he described it in his State of the Union address when he was talking.
First, I propose a standard tax deduction for health insurance that will be like the standard tax deduction for dependents. Families with health insurance will pay no income on payroll tax or payroll taxes on $15,000 of their income. Single Americans with health insurance will pay no income or payroll taxes on $7,500 of their income. With this reform, more than 100 million men, women, and children who are now covered by employer-provided insurance will benefit from lower tax bills. At the same time, this reform will level the playing field for those who do not get health insurance through their job. For Americans who now purchase health insurance on their own, this proposal would mean a substantial tax savings. $4,500 for a family of four making $60,000 a year. And for the millions of other Americans who have no health insurance at all, this deduction would help put a basic private health insurance plan within their reach.
Okay, now, I think his punctuation on the speech got a little screwed up, because I don't know what he meant when he said that they'll pay no income. Obviously, he means income taxes, doesn't he?
Right.
Okay. So they'll pay no income taxes or payroll tax, right, on the first $15,000, is that what it is?
That's right.
And individuals on the first $7,500.
Exactly.
So who's this going to help?
It'll help the wealthy. People with high incomes will receive the tax benefit. People with lower incomes will receive a much smaller tax benefit. And if you're supposed to use that tax benefit to help you buy insurance, it means that we taxpayers are helping the wealthy buy their insurance, but not lower income people, or at least the amount that they're going to receive from this is so negligible they won't be able to buy health insurance. And yet that's where the problem is. In fact, not just lower income, but now average income people are impacted. And it's becoming more and more difficult for them to be able to afford insurance. And this will not do it, because the tax advantage for them falls far short of what insurance will cost.
Yeah. Well, Dr. McCann, I'm still confused on this issue. For example, I mean, I was president of the Screen Actors Guild. And we would go to the table and we would negotiate, wages, working conditions, and also pension benefits and health benefits. That was all part of the package. And the more you got in health benefits, the less you got in wages, and vice versa. Now, I have no idea what my plan costs because I don't pay for it. In other words, I just pay a small premium. I pay it's $150 a quarter. So it's the multi-employer group that's paying for my health care. Is that what I'm going to be paying taxes on?
Well, no. You'll pay taxes only on the value of the policy beyond the $15,000.
Yeah, but I don't know what the value of the policy is. Where do I get to find that out?
Yeah, obviously through his system, that would have to be become transparent. You would have to know what the value of that is. But that's a technicality.
But it's bizarre because I want to follow up on it because the way I see it is this. We've negotiated for a good plan, right? And there are different tiers to the plan, but, you know, if someone makes a certain amount of money, they're entitled to, with the Screen Actors Guild, they're entitled to a very good plan. Now, we've negotiated that. That was already taken into consideration when we had our negotiation because, you know, we took less in wages in order to get that plan. So I've paid for that.
Right.
I've already paid for it.
Right.
Now, let's say they have a $25,000 plan for me, right?
Right.
And let's say that's the value of that plan because it's a really good plan.
That's right.
I'm now going to be paying taxes on $10,000 that I didn't get in wages because I negotiated a better health care plan?
That's exactly right.
That's insane.
Yeah. There is a reason for it, and that is that he's using tax policy to advance his concept of the ownership society.
Yeah.
He wants to use taxes to get employers to drop the coverage for individuals and have individuals go out into the individual insurance market, buy their own plans. He wants them to buy the cheapest plans that will not provide adequate coverage, so that they then own their own medical bills. So his concept of the ownership society is we all have to be responsible for ourselves, and we need to own our own medical bills. And this tax policy is headed in that direction. It's a devious, nefarious plot to destroy the effectiveness of insurance.
Well, I don't know if I disagree with the overall idea that we have to start detaching our health insurance from the employer. I mean, I tend to think that I feel that way because, first of all, it does make American companies less competitive in many ways. I mean, we heard the story about, Ford or GM paying more money for health insurance than they do for steel. I mean, so we've heard that, those stories, and they seem to have some validity. And I've said all along that we grew up in a very strange way as a country with this attachment of our health insurance to the employer. Of course, to me, the solution is that the attachment should be to the through the public sector, that it's, you know, that the attachment should be that health care is a right, and not a privilege, that it shouldn't be negotiated as part of a wage package, but that everyone should have coverage. And that, frankly, I'd like to see that happen through a single-payer system.
That's exactly right. You know, what the irony here is that we do agree with the president in that we should tend to separate insurance from employment,
right,
and make it an unrelated entity so that you have your insurance forever, no matter where you are, what job you have, and so forth. But he's doing it the wrong way. The way you and I agree that it should be done is we should end that and adopt a national health insurance, a single-payer program, so everyone automatically has comprehensive insurance. And that's great, and you don't need the employer involved in that anymore. But what he's doing is he's trying to end that link with no real program to go to. So he's going to give relief for the employer as he cuts the link. Well, we can't do that until we're ready to adopt a national health program, because if we, that too much of health care is funded through employer-sponsored plans.
Yeah.
And if we suddenly cut that loose and don't have a real program out there for people, it'll be a disaster.
Well, but the Democrats, except for, you know, some of them, I mean, obviously the ones that have signed on as co-sponsors of H.R. 676, which is a single-payer plan, is that the Medicare for All plan?
That's it.
Okay.
That's right.
So that's the Medicare for All plan. By the way, that's a perfect name for it, because if people don't think that we have single-payer insurance in this country, then they're not watching really carefully, because we do have something called Medicare. And Medicare, although the costs have been rising in recent years, you know, certainly from an administrative point of view, they've held down their administrative costs amazingly. They're like, what, 2, 3% for administrative costs?
That's right, 2, 3% as opposed to the private insurance bureaucracies that range from 9 to 30% or more.
Exactly. So, you know, but why have the costs? I mean, if we're trying to make the claim that we can have universal health coverage and control the costs, why haven't we been able to control the costs with Medicare?
Actually, we've done... pretty well, surprisingly well. There's a brand new book by Rick Mays and Robert Berenson on the Medicare prospective payment system, and it explains how Medicare has handled funding of health care.
Mm-hmm.
And they have actually made dramatic strides in controlling excessive health care spending, but we need to do much more. We know where the excess costs are, but with our current fragmented system of
right,
public programs, private plans, and so on, we can't get a good handle on it.
So is the private sector driving up the cost of Medicare? And if it was all in single payer, would we have a better way to control those costs?
Absolutely, we would. With single payer, we could, because you're really controlling the health care spending, just as Medicare now controls the spending in the Medicare program, you're really controlling the spending over the overall system, and so you can start spending more in areas where you need it, the urban areas that have inadequate clinics and so forth, and reduce the spending that is clearly excessive, those high-tech end-of-life care that costs a lot of money and actually impairs end of life, poor quality that's much
right,
more expensive.
Right. Now, you know, I heard Barack Obama say that universal health coverage is not a question any longer of whether. It's a question of how. It's a question of when and how. Do you think that Hillary Clinton, John Edwards, Barack Obama are ready to step up finally and say we must move to universal health coverage, period?
They all agree that everyone should have health coverage, but you noticed they're not very loud on the model.
They sure aren't.
We
yeah.
knew that, and it's their political exposure. As soon as they make any suggestion, they'll be shredded, and so they just are walking through that minefield very carefully. Part of that is, in fact, Barack Obama even said, well, it doesn't have to be single payer. So that, you know, of course, was disappointing to us to hear him say that.
Well, they always say it. It's just that nobody has ever come up with any real solution other than single payer, although there have been some attempts. I want to talk to you when we come back about the Massachusetts Mitt Romney plan, the Schwarzenegger plan. Can we do that?
Sure.
And maybe you can give us a little bit of a history lesson as well, because I read somewhere that this whole for-profit system is pretty new, that actually hospitals and things were not for profit early on. So maybe you can give us a little insight into that. And we will be right back with Dr. Don McCann here on Barry Gordon from Left Field, KCAA 1050 AM and KCAARadio.com right after this.
Here's Barry.
And we're back and talking with Dr. Don McCann, the Senior Health Policy Fellow and former president of the Physicians for a National Health Program, PNHP, which is one of the strongest groups lobbying for single-payer health insurance in this country. And it's an issue that's been so close to me ever since I was president of the Guild and testified in front of Congress about this issue. So this has been a long-term passion of mine. And now, you know, other people are saying, well, we can find other ways. And obviously, you know, Mitt Romney, Arnold Schwarzenegger have all tried to. But, you know, there was today on This Week, George Will had some comments about the conservative position. Dr. McCann, I want you to take a listen to this and comment on it, if you would.
Okay.
As soon as it comes up, and here it comes.
The conservative view is that the way you reduce the supply of government is to reduce the demand for it. The way you reduce demand for government is to empower people and make them feel socially competent. This would be a step in that direction. Look at the two reasons, aside from the fact that Bush favors it, the Democrats oppose it. First is, Hillary Clinton just says this will unravel the safety net. Now, what she means is that this might encourage employers to stop providing health insurance.
Certainly over $15,000 they will.
And we should encourage that, to get wages out, health care out of the wage system. I mean, the safety net that Hillary Clinton's so fond of is General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler. There's a reason why it costs $1,000 more to manufacture a car in Michigan than it does across the river in Ontario, Canada, and it is the health care component of this.
Yes, it's the health care component, because in Ontario, Canada, they have a single-payer system, right?
Exactly.
You know, it's not that everyone in Canada is running around, you know, getting tax deductions and running around buying insurance plans. I don't know what. Look, let me ask the most basic question. Paul Krugman has written about this. I mean, can we treat health care just like another commodity?
Of course not. People vary in their health care needs, and the problem is the 20% of people who have great needs and they actually use 80% of our health care. Well, those people cannot be effective shoppers. They don't, first of all, don't have enough money to pay for the amount of care that they need. If you think of 80% of healthcare, that's $1.6 trillion. And to have 20% of our nation paying that $1.6 trillion, impossible. So you have to have pooled risk, and that's what they're all leaving out of their models. That's why their models can't work. George Will totally ignored that in his comment just now. Turn it over to the individual. Yeah, you can have your bill. You know, we have an individual who contacted us this past week. He's the American Dream, an engineer in one of these high-tech companies, and his company bought them the greatest insurance ever. His son has hemophilia.
Yeah.
His bills are over $800,000 a year. The insurance company jacked their rates way up, so they're unaffordable. The company tried to get other plans. No one would bid with this hemophiliac kid. And in about 2 months, this young boy is going to top out their $1 million lifetime benefit. This is what the private insurance industry is doing, is they're telling this hemophiliac, well, too bad. And he's looked at all other programs, and he has no options. He can't pay $1 million a year for health care or $800,000 a year. You know, and that's our system. And so the only way you can pay that $800,000 bill for that boy is for us to all share in the risk. One single risk pool.
Right.
And the private insurance industry splits that all up and then makes it ineffective for us.
Now, does single payer allow for, you know, someone who has the money and is really rich to kind of get supplemental insurance? Does it allow for that? Assuming that obviously they can't opt out of the main plan. But a lot of people have said, well, you know, maybe, you know, they can pay more money and get a private room or something, so it's less offensive to the rich people.
Yes, you could get coverage for things that are not part of the benefit of the program, but the benefits
right.
should be very comprehensive. It should include all effective, beneficial health care services. So you could get insurance for plastic surgery, cosmetic surgery, or penthouse suite in the hospital or something like that,
mm-hmm.
but not for the main care, because once you start allowing people to exit, it'll be just like England. They allow them to exit their system, and then in the public program, you develop queues, the long waits for services,
because yeah.
the doctor is going to do the elective surgery for the private patient first, and the public patient make them wait months.
Does Canada allow an opt-out or no?
Pardon?
Does Canada also allow people to opt out or no?
No, Canada does not let them opt out, fortunately. In fact, they just tried to do that in British Columbia. They opened up an emergency center, freestanding, for lacerations and fractures and things. And the owners were charging the patients cash for that. And the government they got an agreement now that they're going to build the government, because that will destroy their system if they allow outside parallel funding.
Now, Canada is based on a provincial plan, right? It's province by province.
That's right.
Do they vary a great deal between provinces?
A little bit, but they all have to follow the Canadian health care law, which is very simple, fundamental. Everyone's covered, and it's equitable and accessible and portable and things like that. So they all have to provide reasonable health care services to everyone.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's been a lot of talk about the Massachusetts plan, the Mitt Romney plan, and Schwarzenegger's new plan. And I have to say, I think their hearts are in the right place. I mean, I think they're trying really hard to provide and to broaden coverage. I'm not sure that Bush did that at all. I mean, I didn't hear how this would broaden coverage at all. It just sounded like another tax cut for those people that didn't need it. But can you talk a little bit, describe briefly the Romney plan and the pros and cons, and also the Schwarzenegger plan for us?
Well, the Romney plan is essentially an individual mandate, requires everyone to purchase health insurance that isn't already covered through their employer, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There was a very major flaw in the plan, and in fact, we told them about it. And they said, oh, no, it's not a problem. And the flaw is that the plans have to be affordable. What does affordable mean? That means low premiums. But they also said, yeah, but the plans have to have at least basic coverage. It's got to be an insurance plan. It can't be one of these stripped-out things that cover nothing. So they went to the insurance industry and said, okay, give us a basic plan and give us an affordable premium. The insurance industry came back this week and said, well, your basic plan is we can't pay for it unless we charge $385 a month. Well, that's not affordable for this modest income sector that they're trying to fill in the coverage gap. And so it's not going to work. And to require individuals to buy a policy that they can't buy, and then if they did buy that policy, it doesn't cover their expenses anyway, so because of all the gaps in it. And so if they have major problems, health care is not affordable. So it's a highly flawed model. And that's exactly what's wrong with Schwarzenegger's plan, is it too is an individual mandate. You have to buy a plan that they're going to have to make affordable. As Schwarzenegger says, well, $90, $100. There is no such thing.
Yeah.
When you consider that Schwarzenegger says, oh, yeah, but the insurance company has to take everyone. Right now the $90 plans are only for the healthy young people, where they keep all the sick people out, people with who they anticipate any medical problems, and they're stripped down plans that are worthless. Well, once you start making it real insurance and cover everyone, the premiums up in many hundreds of dollars. So it won't work in California either.
With single payer, would there be some, you know, the comment keeps coming up about responsibility. You know, people have to use health care responsibly. You can't just go whenever you have an ache in your shoulder and, you know, go and you run to a doctor and find out what that's about. Obviously, the bigger problem is people that don't go at all and that miss getting really major diseases treated because they don't go in time, I think. But clearly, you know, there is this discussion about, you know, we have to hold down overuse. Are there co-pays attached to a single-payer plan?
That's full coverage.
It is full coverage, okay.
That's right. There's a fallacy in this co-pay. I don't want to get deep into the health policy aspects. It'd take a long time. But the fallacy is that the marginal services, the services that are not too important and you can do without, that applies to those of us who are very healthy and we go in and we tweak the knee and they said, well, we could get an MRI, you'd have to pay so much for it, and said, well, what if I don't get it? Well, you can see how it goes. That care that would be declined is only a drop in the bucket. The real expenses are in those people who have very major health care problems that are using 80% of the health care dollar, 80%. And there we don't have marginal services. We don't have things that say, well, I think I'll wait on my appendicitis and see how it does over the next week or two and if it ruptures and if I get sepsis or not. They don't have the option. And that's where most healthcare spending is, and that's the fallacy of this individual responsibility, the using too much care. That's just not, that's almost a fiction. It's such a small amount.
So what if we publicly provided catastrophic illness insurance and let the rest of it be through the private sector? What would that look like?
Well, then why have the insurers involved at all? Their function is to pool risk and pay the bills. And suddenly, if you you start having $5,000 deductible plans,
yeah,
like the governor's program, Governor Schwarzenegger's, $5,000 deductible, and then you have the government pick up all costs over $25,000. So the insurer covers between covers only $20,000 of insurance. And with all these restrictions, and you can only go to the doctors they tell you and things like that, with a tremendous administrative cost of that, wasting a huge amount of money, why have them in there at all? I mean, that's insane.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that's where we're headed, is we're protecting this industry as we wipe out financial protection for people who need health care.
What are we afraid of? Are we afraid that there's going to be tremendous unemployment in the insurance industry? I mean, what are the, you know, Bush spins out the consequences on Iraq, I guess. What's the nightmare scenario that everyone's afraid of if we convert to single payer?
The one that comes up most often is the government can't do it right, except that's absolutely untrue. If you look at what's happening, Medicare, the government is doing it far better than is the private sector, much lower administrative costs, spending money much more efficiently. And if we did the entire system that way, improve Medicare so it works better, and then provide it to everyone, that would greatly improve our health care value, the way we spend our health care dollar.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the other issue that's always raised is malpractice. And, I know a lot of the conservatives want to go after this by capping fees, which I think is absolutely wrong, capping settlements, because, you know, the people that are hurt the most are the ones that are going to most suffer, which makes absolutely no sense. But how does single payer impact on something like malpractice issues?
Well, there are a couple of things. First of all, as you switch to a system that's oriented to patients instead of oriented to insurers' profits and so on,
right,
you start thinking in terms of how can we make this work better for patients. So you're going to improve the malpractice situation from that way. Second thing is that a big part of malpractice bills costs are for the bills that occur because of the malpractice. Well, that's suddenly folded into the single-payer system. The other issue is that, you know, Bush and others keep saying the problem is malpractice and we need to cap the general damages and it'll be okay. Well, the problem isn't malpractice. Malpractice is less than 1% of our health care costs. Yes, it needs attention. We've got to improve the malpractice situation, reduce error and things like that, bring systems in for that. But as far as the financing of health care, it's almost a non-issue.
Did you hear how Stephen Colbert described the Bush plan?
I heard on the Daily Show.
But did you hear the Colbert? I'm going to play it for you.
This is
his description of the Bush plan. A slow crank up these days. Here we go.
It's simple. Most people who can't afford health insurance also are too poor to owe taxes. But if you give them a deduction from the taxes they don't owe, they can use the money they're not getting back from what they haven't given to buy the health care they can't afford.
That's pretty much it.
Kind of sums it up, doesn't it?
Says it in one sentence.
It really does.
Yeah.
I know. By the way, the lines are open if you want to get in on this conversation. The number is 800-809-0802. That's 800-809-0802. We've been talking with Dr. Don McCann from the Physicians for a National Health Program. If you want to talk to Dr. McCann, you can do that again by calling 800-809-0802. You know, I've done a little bit of reading about this stuff, and the big surprise to me was that basically the plan was not healthcare in this country was really not for profit going back to like World War II. I mean, Kaiser was really not, you know, that model was much more a consumer-driven model. I mean, is that accurate?
That's right. You know, Kaiser is what HMOs were theoretically designed to follow the Kaiser model. And Kaiser model works very well. It was shown to produce high-quality care at a lower cost and integrate the care better. So the Kaiser model was good. So when they authorized employers to offer HMOs to their employees, that was actually a good move.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened is the entrepreneurs moved in and set up these network things that are not integrated health systems. They don't provide efficient care. They're extra middlemen that add to the costs and decrease the efficiencies. And we ended up with those HMOs, which were really an albatross on the system, and it's terrible. Then we went more to PPOs now, which are HMO light.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You still lose your choice of physicians and hospitals and have all kinds of limits and so on. Again, middlemen, they're sucking up a lot of the healthcare dollar and not providing value for what they're doing. They're interfering.
Yeah, well, you know, Germany doesn't have a single-payer system, as I understand it. They have more of what's called an all-payer system, where I guess they regulate and all of the different private insurers and hold them to very specific standards. I mean, is that a way, if we're too shy about putting it all into Medicare?
Well, there are some certainly advantages to the German system over ours, and then the Swiss system, even more so. They use all private insurance plans and an individual mandate, and essentially everyone's covered. The systems work, but Switzerland is the second most expensive system to ours.
Huh.
Germany is the third most expensive, and why go to these complex systems that with a lot of administrative issues and so forth that don't work and are causing a lot of inequities when a straight single-payer system won't do that? You remove
right.
the inequities in the system. So, but, you know, when you talk about insurance in Europe, the private plans, they're all not-for-profit. And furthermore, the pooling function of pooling the risk, they use sickness funds and they use fund transfers.
What's a sickness fund?
Sickness funds are where the premiums are paid into a fund, and then the insurers use those funds to pay benefit. But it equalizes the risk instead of what we have, where each insurance company has its own pool, and it even breaks those pools up into small pools, and then those pools run out of funds, and then they have to jack premiums way up. Someone gets sick in a company, and their premium goes way up because, well, that doesn't happen in Germany because these funds are all pooled together through these sickness funds.
Mm-hmm.
And so it works almost as if you have a single risk pool for everyone.
But it also entails a tremendous amount of regulation, right? I mean,
either
you're going to have a private sector that's heavily regulated, it seems to me, or you're going to have a single-payer system. I don't see anything in between,
other than
the mess that we have right now, of course. But I mean, as a real solution, it just seems that there isn't an in-between. And, you know, those people, for example, I mean, I think the Romney plan, the Schwarzenegger plan, how do we check that out? I mean, how do we enforce an individual mandate? What do we go into everyone and say that you have to? What do they do? Do they send a card in saying I'm insured, like we do to the auto insurance company, or
how does
that all work?
One of the conservative think tanks here in California said, well, you know, we require auto insurance of everyone, and 15% of people don't have auto insurance. Okay, let's require health insurance for everyone, and 15% already don't have health insurance, so we're finished. We don't even have to enact Schwarzenegger's law. Well, the fact is you cannot enforce an individual mandate. If a person doesn't have money, you can't tell him he has to pay the money, he doesn't have to buy the insurance. I mean, it can't work.
Exactly. So then we're stuck with bigger Medicaid bills, and I don't know. It just seems, you know, that it we have such a simple solution that we could put forward, and it just seems that I guess our myths get in the way sometimes, and
right.
And the fact that we have to insist that healthcare is a commodity like buying a car or buying a house or buying a tube of toothpaste. And it just isn't, and we don't seem to understand that. You know, someone said in one of the things that I read, why is it hard to imagine that healthcare is like public education? You know, we don't talk about – yeah, they do. I mean, the arch-conservatives talk about privatizing public education, but most people in this country don't. And most people in this country accept the fact that education is an obligation of the government – to provide. Why can't we see healthcare that same way? It's not like we don't have any models. It's not like everything is privatized. It isn't. I mean, why not treat it as public education and say, okay, we've made a decision that this has to be a public right, that healthcare is a public good, and therefore there has to be a public solution.
Right, and of course, of all industrialized nations, we stand alone there. Every other nation has come to that conclusion. We haven't yet.
Did South Africa finally come aboard, or
they did?
They did.
Right.
So now we're alone.
Because
we used to always say the only industrialized country other than South Africa.
Right.
Now we're alone.
Right.
Oh my goodness. I guess Mandela got them there, huh?
I'm not sure that I didn't follow it real close, but I know it happened. So.
And of course, it's a government-run system, right?
I don't know the details. That one I haven't studied close, but I do know that they have a basically universal program.
Well, what is it that Bush keeps talking about? Argentina or something? I mean, he always looks at some other system for those health savings accounts. By the way, in the last couple of minutes, what about those health savings accounts? I mean, they seem as nonsensical as everything else that he's proposed because, again, you have to have money in order to do it.
That's right. You know, the problem with them is, once again, that 80% of healthcare dollars that are used only by 20% of the people, those people, if they fund a health savings account, they deplete it right away.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't do any good, that 80% of healthcare spending. And as you know, a great many of people have been unable to fund these. The America's Health Insurance Plan, the lobby organization for the insurance industry, released a report a couple of months ago that said, hey, over 3 million people now have health savings accounts. They don't. Over 3 million people have high deductible health plans.
Ah.
But most of them have not been able, the majority of them have not been able to fund the savings account. So it's a fiction. They say it's growing like crazy. No, what's growing are these high deductible plans.
Yeah.
And the only reason they're growing is that the premium is less. It's the cheapest premium. But as we make the premiums more affordable, we make health care less affordable. So these people have the $5,000 deductible that they have to pay before their plan starts paying anything, plus the premium they've been paying all along.
Yeah.
And for many of us, that's a real financial burden. The
sure.
bankruptcy issue, as you know,
of course,
has been a real issue. But what's ironic is those people who have major medical bills that push them into bankruptcy or major contributor of bankruptcy, three-fourths of those people had insurance.
Yep.
So the insurance is not working.
Yeah. Dr. McCann, where can I send the listeners for more information and good information about not just single payer, but you know, some good critical analysis of some of these other plans? Where would be the best place to go?
Well, of course, our website, we have a lot of material, and we've discussed a lot of these things in that. That's www.p PNHP.org.
Mm-hmm.
PNHP.
Okay.
Physicians for a National Health Program.
Great.
Also on there, on the opening page, if you pan down a little bit, there's a picture for you there. It says quote of the day. And if anyone is really interested in this topic, they can click on that and sign up to my quote of the day. And every weekday I send out a health policy blurb.
So as we're closing, what is your quote today?
Well, today was Sunday. So.
Oh, okay. What was your quote on Friday?
Friday was, I'm trying to remember, Medicare prospective payment. I'm not sure. Darn.
Well, we'll look it up. We're going to go to pnhp.org and look it up. Dr. Don McCann, thank you so much for spending some time here at Left Field.
Sure thing.
Okay.
My pleasure.